Accession number 30392, Reel 4.
You stayed as a Spitfire pilot for the rest of your naval career?
Yes. All right. All right. Yes. I forget the name of the carrier and where I was and so on. But I was a bit loud-mouthed, perhaps. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, let me just stop and get this right. Yes, no, this was later. I was back in the UK. I was sent aboard a carrier based in Portland to train aviation cadets when they first joined, and they were on this carrier. And in and out of Portland, you know, I think these cadets used to come and do about 4 or 6 months or something aboard a carrier. Not flying or anything, but just learning naval discipline and so on, seeing how they fared. And I was the lieutenant in sort of charge of them, being a fleet air arm, so I could answer their questions about fleet air arm. Oh, I do hope I get this in the, yes, I think it was there. I think it must have been there. And perhaps I was a bit mildly. Anyhow, one day when I was out of the ship, ashore, on leave or something, they searched my cabin and they found a copy of Karl Marx's Das Kapital. They took it into consideration, and if, I don't know, the captain must have communicated with the Admiralty or something. And a few days later, I was hauled up before the captain, and he said, you will never get any promotion. You will serve 3 commissions in the Persian Gulf running, and no promotion. Do you want to resign? So I thought about it, and I resigned, handed in my resignation. While that was being considered, I was posted, taken away from the aviation cadets, of course, and posted to airfield down in, oh God, I forget, it doesn't matter where, to do a twin engine conversion course and to fly Mosquitoes. I thought, what is going on? They want to get rid of me, and they're sending me off on a twin engine conversion course. But looking back on it later, I think it was very considerate of somebody in the Admiralty sending me on a twin engine conversion course so that I could actually continue a flying career in civil aviation. I don't know. Somebody perhaps was really considerate. Anyhow, I came out eventually. They accepted my resignation.
How did you find the Mosquitoes to fly?
Oh, great. Great. Next best thing to a Spitfire. I mean, taking off a Mosquito, you go up to full throttle, you get there, twin-engined, as soon as you've got flying speed, you lift it 1 foot off the ground, but you haven't got twin-engine flying speed yet, so something could go wrong. You pull up your undercarriage, and you go along 1 foot above the ground until you've got twin-engine flying speed, single-engine flying speed, and then you pull up. Wonderful. Great. But I didn't go into civil aviation.
How was the cockpit of the Mosquito laid out?
Of a Mosquito? There were a twin-seater, and the pilot in the front and the navigator behind. And when you were training ones, the instructor was in the back, and the trainee was in the front seat, and Yes, they were quite difficult to get out of. And there was, you know, competitive training on emergency exits, because you had to get down through the blower fuselage somehow. I forget now. Anyhow, yes, they were quite complicated, very contained layout.
Mm. Had you had any particularly strong political views, considering that you're
Well, yes, I suppose I had. I mean, I don't know that I had strong political views in our country, if you know what I mean, but internationally and globally. I think I was, you know, emotionally supported the Chinese, the Red Revolution in China and so on. A bit wary about Russia and its dictatorship, but hopeful about a communist regime there in general. This was just before the Korean War. I don't know if that had any significance on it. Well, I suppose, yes, it would have been a bit difficult for me, perhaps, being told to bomb, to attack the North Koreans. I don't know. Probably not.
Did your views change over the years since then?
No. No, I've read Marx's Das Kapital. I think it explains a lot. I say now that I would like human beings to live in communities in cooperation with each other rather than in competition. You put a label on me, I don't know.
Were you able to vote in the 1945 elections?
1945? I can't remember, I'm sure. No, I was still in the Navy, I don't think I could have voted then. But I think if you were in a sure establishment, you were able to vote. I can't remember. But, you know, this was early days in the Navy, and if you want to know, I voted Blair in 1997, and I never voted for him again. Sorry, this is.
In terms of the post-war domestic life and the post-war. Politics. How did you find the post-war government and post-war society developing?
Oh dear. I don't know. We are getting very political, aren't we? I'm sorry. Yes, I certainly fully supported the welfare state. I mean, I thought. The Attlee government, I thought at the time, and I still look back and think now, did wonderful things for us. I'm only sorry that what was the welfare state has now been converted into a market state. And there you go.
Was there still any sense of anti-climax, I suppose, that the war had finished, but there wasn't an instant improvement?
No, I don't think so. I mean, rationing went on for a long time and, well, no blackout, but power supplies and things like that were a bit difficult. But, you know, this was something one had to get on with and make the best of. And no, I don't think it was an anticlimax in any way. That's behind us. You know, we've done well, we've won, let's get on with it.
Coming back to your time aboard as a midshipman aboard the ships, was there a different atmosphere aboard the different types of ship? You were aboard cruisers and destroyers, and did the type and size of the ship affect how the crew related?
Well, I suppose actually in a destroyer in the Maori, it's a much smaller unit and probably much more integrated somehow, rather than in a battleship where there are probably getting on for 2,000 people, was in the Mare. As I say, when we were picking up those Bismarck survivors, there were a dozen or so of us around, I suppose. And just because I happened to be the midshipman and they were all sailors, I wasn't actually giving orders, but they were doing what I wanted them to do, if you know what I mean, what I thought was right to do. I'm sure we talked, you know. But I wasn't sort of barking orders at them in any means.
Did the climate and the area of in which you were operating affect the operations themselves aboard ship and the crew morale? Comparing Arctic convoys, say, to the Mediterranean.
I don't think so. I think, you know, it was a job. You might be in the Arctic one day and the Mediterranean 2 weeks later, sort of thing. I don't think it. I suppose it's bloody cold in the Arctic, but I don't think it made much odds, really. I think life just went on. Whichever plane you were. As I say, if it was a battleship, the different, you know, it's probably more different because we were not so closely knit together. But I'm not sure.
And with the example of the Bismarck, to what extent was there a sympathy for the opposing number, for the German sailors aboard the Bismarck?
Well, the 25 we picked up.
Well,
great sympathy.
For the whole crew.
Oh, yes. I mean, they were sailors. We were sailors. And as I say, Sam Brooks went into the water to pick them up. And we, because we were on a scrambling net, there wasn't much point to that, I suppose. Yes, huge sympathy. Help them, get them out. And I'm sure Beaky Armstrong was agonized at having to steam away at full speed and leave 700 or 800 of them. I think Dorsetshire picked up 60-odd and we picked up 25. And I think that was it. But of course that wretched German officer that we cut adrift would have been, he couldn't have been picked up by any Germans, because he'd been towed away from miles away from the mob. I think the German U-boat did manage to pick up some, I'm not sure. There were more, something was picked up besides Dorsetshire and Mare, but I'm not sure what.
Would what have happened to the Hood have affected people's attitudes towards the crew of the Bismarck at all?
Sorry, what had happened?
Considering what had happened to the Hood.
What had happened to the crew of the Bismarck?
Would the crew, would the English crews then perhaps view the Bismarck crew?
Yes. I think, you see, in the Navy, you're standing off. There's a ship 5 miles away over there on the horizon which you're firing shells at. It's not stabbing a bayonet into somebody 3 feet away from you. It's at a distance. It's removed, remote. So that when you do actually see the people close to in the water, you have the full sympathy as if they were British or Japanese or American or French or whatever, human beings.
What had been your attitude towards the Germans throughout the war?
Nazis. We've got to beat the Nazis. Just that, I think. Again, as I say, it's a remote distance. I mean, I've been in air raids in Britain. I've been in London when on a raid sometimes. and would have been glad to see the German aircraft shot down. On the other hand, if you see a aircrew jump out and parachute down, you'd probably go to try and help him. I don't think it would in any way interfere with one's determination to do one's job in the Navy to oppose the enemy and destroy the enemy, defeat the enemy.
And looking back now, how do you view the war as a whole?
It was necessary. We did, in Tony Blair's words, we did the right thing. And there were very, how should I put it, moving, involving days. We were all united that we had to survive and oppose and defeat the Nazis. I mean, when I was on leave or anywhere ashore, we all listened to the 9 o'clock BBC news every night to know what was going on and hear what was going on in the war. It was de rigueur, well, not de rigueur, everybody wanted to throughout the country. Now they changed the 9 o'clock news to 10 o'clock. I really find it difficult to get used to.
Did you have anything in the way of a continuing physical and mental was there any
block
on you? Yes, after the after the war and after your service?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I was trained in the Navy as a cadet and a midshipman and right throughout the Navy to be very physically active, very healthy, very proactive. And I mean, you know, when I was a sub-lieutenant of the gunroom in Mauritius, I had those midshipmen out on the upper deck at 6 or 7 o'clock every morning. We did exercises. One was very careful of one's one was aggressively taking care of one's body and health in general. And I'm very lucky. Look, I'm 85 now and I'm functioning mostly, except up there. And no, I don't. Nope.